Hey again, everybody. It's time for another episode of BitNote. Yes, you know the drill by now. They are video game music, and I talk about the video games themselves. Hope you enjoy. Okay, let's start this off by a classic theme intro track for one of my favorite games, and a classic one at that. Have a listen. So, my friends, what you just heard there was the main theme for Lemmings 2 The Tribes by DMA Design, who later moved on and made a bunch of games which seem to be called Grand Theft Auto, if you've ever heard of them. But before those games where you go around carjacking, they made a lot of fun games, including Lemmings. And boy, was Lemmings a successful franchise. One of those games that was everywhere and played everywhere and just ported to all the platforms, and you're still seeing Lemmings games pop up today. The first Lemmings game, released in 1991, was pretty simple and straightforward. You had a trapdoor, and lemmings would pop out one by one. You couldn't control them directly, they would just keep walking in a single direction, and if they hit something, they'd turn and go in the other direction. And unfortunately, if their current direction involved falling off a cliff or into a gigantic pile of lava, they would so walk forward in that direction. Your task was to assign them a skill. Click on the skill and then click on the lemmings at the right moment at the right time so they'd perform it. Maybe you'd get them to build a bridge or drill through a crevasse, or one of them could become a blocker so that it would stop all the other lemmings from going that direction. That was the whole basis of the game. You had a simple goal, get the lemmings to the exit, and you had a bunch of lemmings coming one after another that you all had to get to the exit, and you had to just strategically make sure that all of them moved in the right direction. I've talked a bit about this before. I think I played music for a classic disco mix that was made by SFX, which was kind of based on Lemmings 2 The Tribes. And as I've said before, this Lemmings 2 The Tribes, as you can see, was a sequel to Lemmings. Although actually it was more like the third game, but let's not get into that right now. Lemmings 2 The Tribes was fun for a lot of reasons. It vastly extended the amount of skills you could apply to lemmings. It gave you, instead of having just a single set of lemmings, it had 12 different tribes. You know, there was sports themed and medieval themed and sci-fi themed and beach holiday themed. Yes, there was a version of lemmings where you dealt them going through a nice little beach, and you could give them skills like kayaking across a whole water or paragliding across something else. You had so many more skills where they'd like twist in a tornado, and you could like use a fan to blow them in different directions. I mean, one of the reasons I like Lemmings to the Tribes, I actually just really did like it, and I didn't even like the first one that much. And one of the reasons I like it was because it's just such a fun game. There's just so many things to it. With the first Lemmings game, you'd keep going through the levels, and if you got stuck, that was it. With Lemmings to the Tribes, you could skip between multiple different levels and everything would go fine. As for the people who actually composed the game, they are referred to as the musical triumvirate in the credits for Lemmings to the Tribes, but it includes Brian Johnson, Raymond Osher, and David Whittaker. David Whittaker has had a long, huge amount of compositions for music in video games, and I believe Brian Johnson also went on to deal with a lot of music in the Grand Theft Auto franchise. So, but yeah, Lemmings is always just going to be a classic thing. It's a bit about puzzle, it's a bit about being strategic, and I still just like Lemmings to the Tribes for its personality and how you could like switch between different tribes if you got stuck on one or the other, and just basically how they just decide to just completely take the concept and just take it as far as it could go, and it was a lot of fun. All right, time to move on to our next track. If cute, fun games with cuddly little creatures kind of bespeaks a bit about the earlier days of video game, I'm going to play a track that's still old by today's standards, but speaks a little bit more to modern game standards. We're talking about a game that takes place in the Middle East and you're controlling American soldiers to, well, let's not spoil it, but I think you can sort of guess it's to take down a bad guy. Oh, before I play this music, I probably should give you a bit of a warning. Normally when I'm trying to get music for a video game, I try to buy it online and, you know, find a place you can download the soundtrack and I buy it and then everyone wins because the developers and sound composers have my money from buying the track, and I win because I got high quality music I can play on the show. But other times I have to resort to other methods, and if I can't get them, then I usually end up having to take the actual files from the video game itself and try to take the music from the game data files itself. This isn't usually a problem, but sometimes, like in a game like this, you ended up having multiple files, and some of them were seemingly identical. So when I was trying to put them together, I figured, I know what happens. What the game is meant to do is play multiple tracks at the same time, and therefore blend them together to form the music. So going on this assumption, I took out some of the tracks, tried to put them into my mix program, you know, a sound editing program, blend them together, and I think what I got was the right music to play in the game. If I haven't, I apologize, but I made my best effort, and I still think it sounds pretty damn good. So here is music from Full Spectrum Warrior, which is hopefully how it is meant to have been heard. So, my friends, what you just heard there was music from Full Spectrum Warrior, which was developed by Pandemic Studios. Pandemic Studios went on to make another bunch of good games before they were bought out by Electronic Arts, and they didn't make quite as good games, then Electronic Arts just shut them down. So I really feel that Electronic Arts certainly did the best they could to make good on their investment. Sarcasm. But Full Spectrum Warrior is actually a pretty interesting game. The music you just heard there was by had the composers of Tobias Enhus and Chris Nealman, but the music was by Machine Head, which is this rock group that I believe Tobias Enhus did some work with. So they've got a nice mix of things, sort of like a bit of an Eastern theme mixed with a lot of other stuff and a lot of ambient music in the game. But it kind of does well for setting the scenes and stringing up a bit of a tense atmosphere and stuff. So I think the whole thing works well. The whole thing is set in a fictional country of Zekistan, where apparently some government stuff is doing some bad things, and suddenly basically you're part of you've basically got two platoons of two squads of American troops who are basically going in to try to maintain the situation, calm things down, secure all these different areas, and basically make the country a slightly better place before the real warfare actually starts to begin, which, although it sort of already has, but, you know, this is just the start. It basically involves taking down a certain military leader, and you're effectively controlling two groups of squads of four members each, and you basically control each squad by moving them around the map and, you know, telling them where to shoot, where to aim, where to everything else. And it's actually pretty well controlled, actually. I mean, instead of a lot of other games where you just have minute control over the people, whenever you move the troops, you basically select where exactly you want them to move, which cover up against, and then you send the command and they move that area. So it's a little like a real-time strategy game, but it's really from a very low-down perspective. You know, the camera is just above them. You move them to areas and then they automatically look around the corner, or you move them to troops and they look up. And the whole thing is just to basically be strategic about your enemy, about your troops. The idea is to move them so that they never are exposed, so that if they confront enemies, they always have a clear sight and can attack the enemies. It's the whole idea. The game was sort of originated to be something of an American training simulator. That was why it was developed. That was why Pandemic Studios were recruited. And to be honest, while I don't think this is a fully accurate simulation of military warfare, and indeed I believe American Army actually tried to take legal action against them for saying that it wasn't realistic enough, the game still is actually a lot more strategic than a lot of other military games out there. For one thing, as I told you, there's the taking cover, but there's also the fact in how you use the ammunition. Most of the time in video games, when you shoot an enemy, the objective is to kill the enemy or get your bullets in. But this Full Spectrum Warrior reflects a more realistic aspect of modern warfare, where often troops will hide behind cover, know that the enemy is behind cover, and then shoot huge amounts of ammunition at them and bullets at them, not to actually hit the enemy, but to suppress them, to keep the enemy engaged, or, you know, suppressing fire so that the enemy has to duck down. And by shooting all these, while the enemy is being suppressed by all these bullets that are flying at them, you move the other team to flank them or get into another position where they have a clear shot at the enemy. So the whole thing is basically about using bullets and firing, not to actually immediately kill the enemy, but just to occupy them, to keep them distracted. And so you're using bullets and firepower, you know, strategically rather than just as outright offensive. And that's a lot of what the game is. You move one team, you try to engage the enemy, you move the other team, you try to engage it. You try to move them to corners and they'll automatically look around. You hope that the enemies will just be out in the wide open, because if you shoot the enemy while they're in the wide open, you're behind cover, then the enemy automatically gets it. But if you're both behind cover, then you just exchange gunfire and you can't really do much more than keep each other engaged. So it's a lot about a nice bit of strategy. You know, often you'll basically have one team firing, occupying the enemy, you'll move the next team on from cover, and they'll occupy the enemy, move them on and on. Like I said, it's not the most strategic. I think I remember one time when there was basically I was in the middle of a corridor which was leading to a courtyard, and there was enemies at cover at the middle of the courtyard. So I had one team distract them, and another team head down through the exact same channel of the courtyard, then just skirt around the edge of the courtyard, and for some reason the enemies didn't see us and suddenly realized, hey, maybe we should stop shooting at these guys over there and start shooting towards the people who are clearly trying to walk, skirt us and go around us. But like I said, with these games, you're not expecting the most precise, realistic military precision. But what the game does do good is just taking aspects of real modern warfare, i.e. the whole skirting and everything, and just implementing it into what's effectively a fun game and enjoyable to play. The game also has a couple of other nice touches as well. All the troops that you command have got their own little personalities and little backstories to them. You don't get that much of it or much understanding or any character development during the game, but it's kind of a nice background. So, like, one of the guys who's controlling this troop is, like, basically a Muslim who's a vegetarian. And the one I like the most is basically this NYPD cop who's just basically about as gruff as he can be in combat as you'd expect him to be anywhere else. So he's even got NYPD at the back of his helmet. So it's a nice attempt at character. The actual storyline to the game is, when I was actually playing it, I had no clue about. It seemed to be Zekistan, bad stuff was happening, there was this guy you're meant to kill, and suddenly a whole load of military stuff, and apparently NATO was moving in as well. So it wasn't just, you know, America just plunging in and causing this whole ruckus, you know, themselves as normal. There was actually other countries who were actually agreeing to their military action in this fictional scenario. I did find it strange that things were very disconnected. I mean, you know, we were killing a lot of enemy troops and I wasn't quite sure, you know, well, are these really the good guys or not? And then at one part you suddenly abruptly come across a mass grave and I suppose you're going, well, I guess we're doing the right thing because apparently all these people are being killed. So, yeah, and everything. But it is kind of funny because every time you kill one of the enemies, they say, haha, that's another Zeke down or that's another Zeke. But since it's set in Zekistan, shouldn't the term Zeke should pretty much apply to every single citizen of the country? So should you really be focusing on a term that can... labeling your enemies by a term that could just as easily cover the civilians of the country as well or anything? And then when I was just preparing for this show, I happened to look through the Full Spectrum Warrior Instruction Manual, which is... I used to always look through instruction manuals, but and actually found there was actually details on the correct characters and on the actual conflict itself, you know, the whole fictional background, which is pretty cool. I mean, instruction manuals used to always be good for reading games. Back when I was first into video games, you know, the manuals usually contain the only plot that the video game actually had. But I fell out of habit when I noticed that spoilers or would be mentioned in the instruction manual, or they tell you about characters that you'd meet later on in the game. But I was looking through, and yes, the conflict is detailed. They've got a nice little quick history of the geopolitical intelligence reports in Zekistan. And the fun thing I noticed about it was that the history of Zekistan is kind of slightly modeled on the real-life history of Afghanistan, in that Russia did invade Zekistan in this fictional universe, but then America ended up supporting the rebel troops against them, which meant that that the CIA and America was potentially causing the whole conflict that the video game is plunges you into, because, of course, they literally fought their independence, and then the new regime was established, and then a new guy came to power, and then he started doing all these killings and everything. And then I looked through the instruction manual, and apparently the very guy who in the game you're trying to kill and assassinate to just deal with all, to end all this trouble, that guy was effectively trained by the CIA to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. So it's kind of funny that when you're playing the game, it's typical, you know, you're not really doing just, you're just following orders, going from place to place, killing these things, securing the area. And then when you read the instruction manual and learn a bit about it, you realize, hey, wait a sec, while in the game it was all about how America was making the world a better place, apparently some of the current problems that I'm dealing with in this game were caused by Americans' actions in the first place. So, yeah, I suppose I'm reading a very political slant into this game instruction manual, but it is kind of funny that even in a fictional depiction of a fictional war that with a fictional country where you're basically sending a bunch of American troops in order to deal with this great evil threat, that even then you don't completely escape the fact that a lot of the current trouble isn't just caused by evil guys, but also by the actions of the very country that you're meant to be representing in this game. Funny. But I think that actually makes it works better. I mean, good and evil are just really childish concepts, and while they're fine in the odd video game, in the real world, I think it's, and sometimes even in fictional universes, I think it's more interesting when we show that the evil isn't quite black and the good isn't quite white, and then it's where all the ambiguity and interest and, you know, it could be, and false actions lies that just makes everything more interesting. All right, I was going to say a few other things about the game, such as the fact that I just took the original Xbox disc and threw it into an Xbox 360 console and found out it was one of the few games that plays perfectly on the 360, even with extra widescreen support and better detail and everything, and it worked fine. But instead of going into talking about all that, I think I'll move on to my next game, which is Thomas Was Alone. And that music was Where Are You? By David Hudson from Thomas Was Alone by Mike Bithell. Unlike Full Spectrum Warrior, where I had to go digging around in the game data files and doing all that sort of stuff, the Thomas Was Alone soundtrack is available on the website Bandcamp just to download after a small payment, and then you get all the high-quality MP3s. Bandcamp is a great site. I was able to just get a lot of great video game music tracks, usually indie video game tracks from it, and it's just even like Burrito Bison, and it's just a great place to buy tracks. David Hudson also has worked on a bunch of other games, such as Monster Mind and PlayStation Home. I wonder if I'll talk about PlayStation Home one of these shows. It's kind of an interesting thing where basically the PlayStation 3 tried to integrate this whole virtual environment on it, but it turned into a very sleazy like advertising spot, but I'll go into that some other time. But Thomas Was Alone is an interesting game. It's on its most basic level, it's a platformer where you basically control all these little different sized and different colored rectangles, and you can jump them and bounce them and everything. But the key thing is that you can switch between them in the middle of the game, and each rectangle has a different ability. So your entire purpose is to try to get them all into the right position to complete the level. And obviously you can trade off of their own abilities. So the most basic thing is you move one square and it goes to a point, then you control the other square and you jump on top of that square, and then you are able to jump over the ledge that way. But a lot of them have interesting abilities, such as one can float in this acid water that others can just die in, and a bunch of other objects, you know, another one just has a very bouncy surface. So if you just move that one there and then move another rectangle and jump on top of it, you bounce up and up and down again. So each rectangle has its own personality, and that's actually kind of part of the game, because even though it's a very simplistic environment, you know, basic shapes, basic cube, very rectangular, harsh environment, there's actually a nice story where each rectangle represents this AI, and it's all a search for finding, for understanding the system they're in, and they're dealing with threats, and this whole thing about trying to recreate the world they're in. It's I don't want to spoil too much about the game, because it's a very nice plot. It's not like some hugely complex like cutscene or anything. Most of it is actually narrated by a very nice British comedian, actually. His name is Danny Wallace, who's also done some voice work for Assassin's Creed. But he adds this nice kind of like narration to the whole thing about how you're, which is kind of humorous and kind of fun, about this little thing called this, starting with Thomas and then all his friends, about their own little personalities and how they try to navigate their environments, as you navigate the environment. And over time, you kind of build a bit of a connection to it, which is kind of the whole point of the game. You kind of feel about these little squares as being personalities, and try to just, as you're controlling it and have them jump over the little items, you just try to, you just sort of see them a little bit more as the, you know, personality that they're meant to represent. So with that, I think I'll say goodbye. This has been David Collins with BitNote, and I leave you with Gravity from the same game by David Huston. Thanks for listening.